You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat. At 8 o'clock this morning, almost 3,000 people were fighting a gigantic wildfire in New Mexico that has burned more than 300,000 acres. It was last month when a prescribed burn by the U.S. Forest Service escaped, resulting in the Hermit's Peak Fire, which later joined up with the Calf Canyon outbreak, creating the largest wildfire that New Mexico has ever seen. According to a report from NPR, hundreds of structures have burned, and many people are angry, sparking backlash against prescribed burns, not just in New Mexico, but across the West. On Friday, the Forest Service put a pause on prescribed fires while a 90-day review of protocols takes place. Joining us today to talk more about the risks and the benefits of prescribed fires is the outreach coordinator for the Idaho Prescribed Fire Council, Brett Miller. Hi, Brett. How are you?
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
All right. Tell me about the Idaho Prescribed Fire Council. Who are you?
Sure. Well, we are a relatively new Prescribed Fire Council. We are, I think we approved our bylaws in 2018. And a prescribed fire council is a, there's, you know, they're common across the country. I helped stand one up in Utah as well as in Idaho. And they are an organization dedicated to increasing the appropriate use of prescribed fire to help increase our safety, you know, community well-being, safety, and improve the conditions so that we are more resilient to wildfire risk. And this is a, you know, we think about prescribed fire in all its shapes and sizes. And that's something I maybe wanted to talk about a bit today, that, you know, what I might be thinking of as a prescribed fire is a lot of different things potentially on different lands, not just Forest Service land, not just federal land, it's state land, it's private land potentially. It's a management tool that is very old and effective. Native Americans used cultural burning pre-European settlement, and it was a part of their stewardship. And, you know, we are learning more and more about the benefits of using fire intentionally on the landscape. But it's certainly something that needs to be done very carefully and thoughtfully and with a great consideration of the potential risks.
Now, you're sort of describing what a prescribed burn is, but let's get more specific for folks who don't know or have never heard about one. How exactly does it work?
So, I mean, a prescribed fire is exactly what it sounds like on the tin. It's a prescription, like a doctor writes a prescription for you if you come in and you're sick and they think this is going to help. So it is a way to treat the landscape in order to make it more resilient to wildfire risk. And a lot of these landscapes are adapted to have a more regular fire cycle than they've had for the greater part of the past century. And, you know, and so by being intentional about when those fires occur, what we're actually trying to do is make sure that the likelihood of a catastrophic or high intensity wildfire is significantly diminished. Because a lot of our landscapes across the West and across the United States, for that matter, there's a lot of fuel on the landscape, and there's a lot of high risk landscapes that we're very worried about there being an ignition on a red flag day and that ignition being difficult to control. So prescribed fire is when, you know, we identify an area that could benefit from controlled burn, and we light that fire. There are people there. There are resources on the ground to make sure that fire stays within a designated boundary and that they're ready to be activated if it doesn't. And, you know, the statistic I'd like to cite here is that 99.84% of prescribed fires are within their burn plan. So, you know, it's very rare for prescribed fires to escape, and even more rare for them to escape the way that we are seeing in New Mexico right now.
Yes, I saw that figure too, which was fascinating. And the Forest Service said they start an average of 4,500 prescribed mm-hmm. fires each year across the country. So, and since it's obviously goes very well for, like you said, 99.84% of those. We don't usually hear a lot about them. Occasionally we'll hear something that says there's going to be a prescribed fire today over here, and then it just happens, and that's the end of it. So what about Idaho? How many prescribed fires do we normally have?
I don't know if I want to put a number on it, but I will say that just last week, the Boise National Forest burned 125 acres of, and a successful treatment. So I don't know about you, but I live in Boise, and I didn't notice any smoke, or I would never have any idea that that had happened. And so I think that's maybe a better way of sort of expressing the instance, you know, of prescribed fire on the national forest, rather than say putting a number on it. The number is a moving target due to policy programs as well as conditions. You know, the Forest Service in particular, but everybody that uses prescribed fire that I'm aware of is very intentional about when and how they do it. And frankly, the window for prescribed fire is very small. It's there's a floor as well as a ceiling. So there are conditions that you just can't burn in at all. And there are conditions in which it's obviously not safe. So that's one thing that I think is maybe not as well understood. When I talk to people, my friends and family, about prescribed fire, they often ask, well, why don't you just burn the winter, burn when it's, you know, earlier and there's, you know, snow or it's really wet. And I say, well, just imagine you're camping and you're trying to make a campfire with wet fuel and how hard that is. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, we have to have conditions enough that we can burn, and then conditions enough, you know, that it's safe to do so. And so that can be a very narrow window, and that can mean that there's a great variance year to year in how many fires are successfully, or, you know, how many prescribed fires are lit. They'll have plans in place, target dates, and then they might not even be able to burn on that day because of conditions.
Well, and you're talking about what sounds like a lot of planning, a lot of looking both at weather and conditions on the ground. You mentioned smoke, which I know has been a concern from some folks about prescribed fires. So you have to get all of those things together before you actually do such a fire. I think there's a misconception that there are folks who just go out and say, well, let's just do a prescribed fire over here. Sounds good. We'll do it today.
Yeah, that's certainly not the case on federal land of any kind or state land. In private lands, I know there are rules and regulations, and people might violate them, but a lot of planning has gone into, you know, a lot of thoughtfulness has gone into making sure that prescribed fires are done safely on the Forest Service land or on federal land. I mean, a burn plan, it could be years in the making, and it's not something that is done on a whim. They will go out and identify a landscape and, you know, figure out what the fuel type is and really think about it and be very intentional. It's not done on a whim. And it does take a lot of planning, and it takes a lot of people and a lot of effort. And so an organization like ours, the Prescribed Fire Council, what we would like to see is more prescribed fire done. But we want it to be done properly, just like the ones that we are doing now. And so what we're really advocating for is putting more resources into this, because we believe that it is an important tool in the toolkit for reducing wildfire risk to people and communities. And you talked about smoke. Smoke's a big issue from prescribed fires, as well as just in general. We expect to see more smoke in the air going forward, and that is due to the conditions on the landscape. So it's not the case that if we halted prescribed fires, that there would therefore not be smoke. There will be smoke from wildfires, certainly. Hopefully, by getting more prescribed fire done, we can try to be more intentional about when that smoke occurs, and, you know, how much we're putting into the atmosphere. There are people who work in in Department of Air Quality that are helping make sure that the air clearing index is such that when we do put fire in the landscape, that we're, you know, it's not, the conditions aren't such that we're trapping that smoke in the valley.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Now, because of the New Mexico fire, there are some who are advocating against prescribed burns. What would you say to folks who are opposing what is basically a preventative measure to try and stop, you know, bigger wildfires or, you know, wildfires from spreading?
Well, first of all, I would just acknowledge that this is something that has risks associated with it. And I would not deny that. And I don't think that anyone would. I believe that it is one of our most effective, cost-effective, as well as, you know, cost is a big part of it. And I'll talk about that in a second. But I think it's one of our most cost-effective means of making our landscapes more resilient, which means that our communities are more resilient to wildfire. But there is certainly risk associated with it. And I understand that. And I know why people would be nervous about it. Unfortunately, the conclusion that I come to when I look at the condition on the landscape is that if we aren't doing this, then an unintentional ignition is going to happen under worse conditions. And, you know, it's not the case that if we don't do prescribed fires, we won't have wildfire, unfortunately. So, you know, we have to, I believe, the wildfire situation is, frankly, it's urgent. It is a serious situation, and it requires a massive investment and effort, and it's going to take a long time to get there. And we need to pull out all the tools in the toolkit. I'm an all the tools in the toolkit kind of person. So some people would rather that we did mechanical thinning. I'm for mechanical thinning where it's appropriate, where it makes sense, where it's cost effective. You know, it's not always possible. We cannot cut nearly as much out of the forest as we can burn because it's expensive to do it, especially if we're trying to preserve some of those bigger trees that are resilient to low intensity fires. So that's the landscape we're trying to restore. That's expensive to do. And then you have to get the fuel out of the forest because otherwise it's a ladder fuel, and that's expensive to do. And so where's the closest road? So I'm not against thinning. I think that's a tool in the toolkit. A clear cut even makes a great fire break if it's really, you know, intentionally placed, but that's not going to do, that's not going to be 100% effective. So I think, you know, prescribed fire, but then also we could do thinning and then we could burn piles. So, you know, maybe we don't do broadcast burning. Maybe we make piles and we light them when conditions are safer. So there's a lot of things, like I said at the beginning of the interview, that there's a lot of things in my mind when I say prescribed fire. It's not all one thing. And that's important to keep in mind. But I don't see a way to avoid using this management tool going forward if we're going to really try to make our landscapes more resilient. I would recommend that the listeners or anyone who's interested go to a website called wildfirerisk.org. So that's wildfirerisk.org. And they can type in a community like Boise or Idaho City, where I lived, and you can look for yourself at the risk to you in that landscape from fire. And, you know, I encourage people to look at that and look at where they are on that map and just really take in, you know, the situation and why we are employing the strategy and what we're trying to achieve with it. And I know that's not going to convince everybody, and I'm ready to have conversations with those people if they would like to discuss it. And, you know, and that's, I can understand if some people come to a conclusion that it's not worth the risk. That's not the conclusion I come to, because the fact is, of, you know, the way I see it, the vast majority of our prescribed fires are successful, and they improve those landscapes so that they reduce the chance that an unplanned ignition on that same landscape could turn into something like we're seeing in New Mexico.
All right. We've been speaking with Brett Miller, the outreach coordinator for the Idaho Prescribed Fire Council, about the risks and benefits of prescribed fires. Thanks so much for being here today, Brett.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And thank you.
Up next, we'll take you on a tour of jungles around the globe on a search for the world's big cats. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat. You're listening to Idaho Matters.